Talking Heads from the Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors.
Hi, this is Liz Sander speaking, the Chief Professional Practice Advisor from the Institute of Internal Auditors. I'm really honoured to be able to introduce to you this afternoon James Bickford, who is the Managing Director of the Reputation Institute. And I can almost hear everyone saying, what's that? Well, can I just ask you to listen? And you will, I'm sure, immediately you hear this conversation rush to the website to find out more. So please may I introduce James.
Well, firstly, thank you very much for having me. It's wonderful to be here. Maybe we just start by, what do we do?
Yes, that would be really helpful.
Reputation Institute happened and was born about 20 years ago. And interestingly, it was created through the Brent oil crisis. So Shell called a professor in Copenhagen who was beginning to look at what was the relationship between corporate doing well, doing badly, and this thing called reputation, and did that affect how a corporate was moving forward. And from that, it became a think tank, and from there, more and more companies around the world, because through the think tank, we found a way actually to measure corporate reputation, and we may talk about that later. So we found a model, a holistic model that could measure a company's reputation. And from there, the business began to commercialize, and 20 years later, we are where we are. Reputation Institute has now the largest normative database in the world on corporate reputation. We measure 2,000 companies a year, and the companies that we measure are all listed companies. So they're all $2 billion or above. And through having 15 years worth of data, so we're benchmarking people all the time, so we're looking at industry, we're looking at corporations stand alone. We're also looking at region, global, local. We also have an advisory arm of our business. So we will measure reputation, which is giving us the data and the insights to actually look at the strengths and weaknesses of an organization that we can then plan and strategize and implement and set an agenda to be able to move the dial on reputation. The key, of course, is where is the dial? And the way we measure is very simple. There are two parts. The first part is the emotional score. So, do I hold you in high esteem? Do I admire you? These questions are giving us a score from 1 to 100. But then the more important thing is we actually start asking, why did you give us that emotional score? So then we're looking at 7 dimensions. And this is with informed general public. And those 7 dimensions, we're asking you about the leadership of an organization, the products and services, the workplace, the governance, the CSR, the performance, and the leadership. So we're looking at a business holistically, and we're asking someone who is familiar with that organization on those 7 areas, which then starts to tell us why they gave us that emotional score. But the most important thing is, what are they not understanding from that organization, what we call fence sitting. Oh. I know you well, but the industry data that we get tells us that, for example, in pharmaceutical, governance is one of the top 3 out of the 7. When we ask the general public, we may find that those who are familiar are fence sitters in governance. So they've given you a good score, but when you drill down, they don't really understand what you're doing in governance. So that can start to open up those debates.
So does that mean that they then potentially score you by the product that they know and therefore and how that's worked for them rather than detailed knowledge of the business if they were the public?
Good question. So we put everyone in the general public through a filter system, and that filter system is from 1 to 7. And what we do is we filter out people who are below 3. So we go from 3 to 7, and the familiarity of that organization obviously is increasing towards the 7. So people who are giving us the research that we need are familiar or more than familiar with the organization. So if you just to pick up your point on product, which is great, because we're not looking at or asking somebody around a specific thing. So I'm not saying, so what do you think of our organization's products or services or brand or trust? Mm-hmm. We're saying, what do you believe of the whole organization, the corporation itself? So a good example of that is we measure Unilever. We measure Unilever, the corporate. We don't measure the product brands that they have, because for us, they are assets that are contributing to the overall corporate reputation.
And interestingly, you were talking about reputation, you're talking about product, you're talking about brand. One of the things you said right at the beginning was 2,000 listed companies. Okay, so what if we're not listed? What if I'm sitting here listening to you as a head of audit that's not a listed company? Is what you're going to share with us over the next 30 minutes, can I use that? Does it work for me?
Great question. So I should have clarified a bit, actually. So we do what we call an investment study. So, for example, Endelman have just done the trust barometer at Davos, for example. That's their investment studies. But we measure 2,000 companies across the planet. And we invest ourselves in that. And we, this year, the UK top 100 companies off the FTSE will be announced this year. And we do it every year around April. And we also have a global top 100 as well. So, great. What do we do? So let's take the UK. This is the market that we're in. So in the UK, Reputation Institute have a whole myriad of different clients. And so we will measure FTSE companies. We measure over 30 departments within the Cabinet Office. So to your answer, you know, we only today were reporting to Highways England, for example. So when measuring reputation, whether you are a B2C, a B2B, whether you are a local council, whether you are building roads, you are all responsible for the reputation of your organisation. And therefore, we can measure you.
Okay, that's great. One of the things you just touched on there was the Edelman Trust Barometer. And we, as the Institute, have been looking at that in terms of, disappointingly perhaps, it's falling. And the 2018 one would say that the UK is still falling in terms of trust from stakeholders, employees, customers, suppliers. We're looking at it as internal audit from a, how can we help our organisation build greater trust. And we're looking at it from corporate governance, revised code of corporate governance coming out later this year, and also from culture within the organisation. Some of the things that you were talking about then when you were talking about performance resonated with me from a culture perspective. So in this three pillars, if you like, of trust, governance and culture, how and where does reputation sit?
It sits across all.
Great.
And more.
Good.
So what's just, I just wanted to rewind slightly. What's the outcome of, we've measured, we have an overall score.
Yep.
We also, within those seven dimensions I spoke to you about, kind of visualize it as a circle, kind of diced up like an orange, and we have the seven. There will be a score within each of those. And with that, we can then work with the communications department, we can work with the CEO, we can work with a committee. Reputation Institute helps organizations implement reputation committees, for example. But what's the outcome? The outcome is that we create pathways, strategies around where we believe we want to pull the lever on some of the scores that we've got. Why are we doing it? What's the goal at the end? And the goal at the end is to increase supportive behavior. Simple.
Great.
If I increase supportive behavior, then people are going to recommend me, people are going to buy me, people are going to invest in me across. So there's a whole spectrum of stakeholders. And by the way, we can measure beyond general public, so mm-hmm. we can measure any stakeholder.
So it would give me potentially, as a business, competitive advantage.
Of course.
If I, you know, if I had a good reputation scoring.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I know there are a lot of different organisations in the audience today, but let's just go back to a simple sort of scenario of a FTSE company, let's say. Through the data that we have, there's some interesting statistics in terms of KPIs. What does it do in the end? Okay, I'm increasing supportive behavior because I've done all this work, because I have the data that tells me that I need to do better in these places. My supportive behavior is increasing. So for the last 10 years, for example, we have measured companies, for example, in the US or FTSE or CAC, where their reputation is 80 points or more, which is excellent, and we've measured them against their indices, and they're constantly outperforming their indices. So that's one measurement. The second measurement, for example, would be, you mentioned culture, workforce culture. Workplace is one of the seven dimensions. Therefore, we can bolt onto what we call RepTrack, by the way, which is the measurement model. We can, if an organization is concerned about workforce, then we can plug in more to get more data out about workforce. So in setting an agenda from that data, when you're doing your employee surveys, if you see them rising because of what you're doing, then again, your supportive behavior is getting better. Mm. When an employee goes to the water cooler to get a glass of water and someone's standing there and they go, so why do you work here? And they, I work here for all the right reasons, then that's going to spread and the supportive behavior is going to go up. So an example of a return on investment there is retaining talent, yes, and attracting talent.
And that's also your bottom line, because, of course, you know, recruiting and training is a very expensive business.
Yes.
So if you can recruit the right people and retain them, that's got to be a plus.
And I think where the exciting thing for workforce, and 2017 wasn't great for workforce in the UK. You know, we just have to look at Sports Direct. We have to look at Amazon, McDonald's, for example. Mm. And I think workforce, if there were some areas that, coming back to internal audit, you know, workforce, I think, is really now within probably the top three that really needs to be kind of, in my view, there needs to be a new agenda for it. I don't think society is prepared anymore for the excuses and so on and so forth. The other area, just quite an interesting story. We measure Samsung. And Samsung had an excellent reputation, 83. They had built an economy around reputation, what we call a reputation economy. They believe that reputation, yes, it's an intangible, but they deal with it in terms of how do we protect, yes, but build our reputation. So in times of a crisis, like any economy, sometimes you have to spend a bit or give a bit. When their phones were melting in people's pockets, their reputation dipped. Not a lot. Obviously, it hit the bank account by 40-odd billion. But actually, it was the reputation that was the focus. If it went too far, how long would it take to rebuild? But because they had put a lot in their reputation bank, they were in excellence. Yes, their reputation dropped, but it bounced back very quickly. Mm-hmm. Because those supportive behaviors that I was talking about that they had earned proved to be right.
Yes.
If you take Volkswagen, for example, Volkswagen had, at the same time of their crisis, their reputation wasn't that great anyway. It was around 63. So when Dieselgate happened, and, you know, let's be honest, and it's out in the public, you know, they weren't exactly honest. The general public saw that their reputation dropped to around 45, which is poor. But here's the kicker. It is taking them way, way longer to start to rebuild that reputation. So imagine if their score had been 83, if they had been in that excellent zone, I think they would have dropped a lot more than Samsung anyway, just because of the way they dealt with it, but they would have recovered slightly quicker.
So there are lessons to learn for organisations by not just thinking about themselves, but watching others in terms of the importance of the reputation currency. And I think once, when we spoke before, and perhaps you'd like to share this again, is that the currency is banked and built, and what the organisation can do and how the board can help build that currency.
Yes, here's the thing, I and we spoke about this before, I still believe when 20, 25 years ago, brand was where reputation is now. People, okay, I kind of get brand, but what is it? Is there a value to it? And now, of course, people talk about it. It's done. Reputation, funnily enough, is in that kind of space right now. We know we need it. We know it must be across the whole organization. But what's that journey we take? And I used the word with you before this meeting about evangelizing around reputation. I think we're still in that space and we're educating about it at the same time. People know it's important, but where does it belong? Where's the authority behind it? If the board, it's not on the board paper as an agenda item, then my view is you're not going to get as far as you want. We advise organizations on KPIing CEOs on reputation. So now it's becoming part of their pay packet currency. Interestingly, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, there are a lot of research, whether it's in brand or trust or reputation, where we ask, you know, a number of CEOs how important it is. And usually, whether it's brand or trust or reputation, doesn't matter. They'll all go, yes, it's very important to my business. But in all of those still, they'll be asked the second question, which is, so how is it being implemented in your organization? And the scores are very low. So there's this big disconnect between the two. And my view is the disconnect is because it's not KPI'd up in the C-suite. The board and the remuneration committee have to sit down with the CEO and go, we now need to make this part of your remuneration. We need to make it a currency within your organization. If you are KPI'd on that as a bonus, and whether that is our score, which is where it sits at the moment. So we're marrying the score, the data, the outcomes of what we're doing within Reputation Institute to bonus plans. The CEO is then going to go where? They're going to go to their C-suite and go, okay, you know, it is now a KPI of mine, so I'm going to spread that across the organization, which yes. is, of course, what needs to happen, because reputation doesn't belong in one department. And then it will filter down through the business. And through what you were talking about, workplace, culture, we need to build it from the bottom up.
It's interesting to hear you talk like that about reputation, because if I wind the clock back mentally, I can remember when we were in exactly the same place with risk.
Yes.
You know, boards weren't interested in risk. They didn't see it had anything to do with them. And then suddenly you start seeing organizations begin to topple and fall because they weren't prepared. They didn't have contingency plans in place. And then suddenly, you know, boards are told risk appetite, the setting of the appetite is down to you. And they don't want to carry the burden alone. So then they cascade it out to the C-suite and each tier of management thereafter. And now, you know, risk is the DNA of every business. Nobody stops and thinks about, should we be doing this? It's just part of what they do. So I guess with reputation, it's the journey, isn't it?
And a very great word you use, it's a journey. And I think with reputation, the danger, whether you're working for a non-profit or a FTSE company or something in between, the danger is that you see it as a switch-on, switch-off light, and it just isn't.
No.
Reputation is earned. When we meet as human beings, we're looking at each other in a lot of different ways. Do I trust you? Do I like your brand? Do you have a reputation that precedes you? Good or bad, by the way. So even as just humans, we're dealing with this word every day of our life. There was a great story given to me many, many years ago, to your point. It always makes me smile. You know, we talk about things like reputation and risk. And let's face it, the reputation has been around since the day I took my barrow to the market. Is that the sheep that I want? You know, because that farmer has the best reputation in my valley for giving me good value and so on and so forth. And this story was told to me many, many years ago. And it kind of works with reputation. A mum is in the playground of the school. And she's chatting to the other mums. And a mum says, do you know what? I just bought a new washing machine. It's brilliant. It's the best washing machine I've ever had. It's economic. It cleans my clothes. It's fresh and wonderful. those mums go home and kind of thinking of a new washing machine. I think I might go for that one. And then they go to work and they're, you know, someone was telling me about a washing machine and then goes and tells somebody else. So they're all apostles. Yeah. You know, they're going out and they're promoting this great washing machine. Everyone goes and buys them. The reputation is up there, fantastic. They would have got a score of 85 in RepTrak. 2 months later, they're back in the playground and the mum's coming. She looks a bit gloomy with her husband. And her husband's, they're both dropping the kids off at school. And the husband says, you know, we bought that washing machine and it's dreadful. We had it put in, the light went on it. And everyone was going, so what was so bad about it? And they said, well, we rang the washing machine company, but they put us in touch with somebody who was going to come and mend it. But they were a third party. And it took them 3 weeks. They came with the wrong part. And now suddenly they're becoming terrorists of the business. That's the same with reputation. Because now I have built my reputation economy, right? But it's been taken away from me. And I don't have control of that. So what do I do now? And one of the lessons today, I think, is when you're thinking of risk, we have to now be thinking beyond just the organization we're with. And we have to be looking at the supply chain that we use. We have to be looking at the partnerships we use. You know, we go to conferences now and it's all about collaboration, co-creation, communication. Share is the word of this century.
Yes.
And therefore, because we are opening our doors to that, both as a financial business model, of course, and a time business model, then we're opening ourselves up to a lot more.
Yes.
So when it comes down to risk, I believe that within internal audit, within the C-suite, even really at the board level, that stone as far as reputation is rippling a couple of ripples out.
Yeah.
We need to allow it and manage it and measure it and KPI it and let it go way further, because the future is going to be multiple stakeholders.
And I think that's a really valid point, because we in internal audit certainly look very much to third parties in terms of the potential damage to the reputation of your organisation. It doesn't have to happen within, it can happen by third parties, and there are examples of that. But if you talk to risk people, they will say, don't assume it's the big suppliers that are going to bring you down. There are ones way down here that may be operating in China where they have all sorts of different rules, regulations and customs and practices. So it could be a supplier number 13 or 14 down the chain that we will probably never get to. So ought we to be thinking differently in terms of suppliers?
It's interesting you mentioned China. I've just spent 3 years in Asia. And it's fascinating to see that chain from a global headquarters, the tail that kind of goes out across the world. And the management of that is extremely complex.
Absolutely.
But if there was a trend that we've seen definitely really blossom in the past 5 years, is companies realizing now that they have to have something beyond what they have today. And we now will call that a purpose.
Yes.
You know, my why. Why am I here? I build washing machines, great. But why are you here beyond that? What are you trying to do beyond just building washing machines? What is your purpose on the planet? Mm. What's your purpose within humanity, within your community, within your workforce? What are you doing that is contributing to something more than yourself? We used to call it corporate citizenship, right?
Yes. I
think we've kind of growing up from that. I think that we're still very much like reputation, actually. I think, you know, social responsibility, corporate citizenship, it's now called social impact. And I think that's good that it's changing, because I think we're finding our way. Purpose isn't just about, you know, what charities do I support on the 10th page of my website. It's way, way beyond that now. And to answer your question, take the China office. Let's take that. Let's take that complex. Or let's take the China office, or let's take a local council who have a number of different suppliers. And some, to be honest, whether it's in corporates or councils, we kind of just let them get on until something goes wrong. Because there's so much to manage. One thing that I think can not stop risk at the further down that chain we go, but certainly help us manage it better, is when we are looking for a supplier or a third party or a contributor who we know is going to impact our corporate reputation, should we be asking them what their purpose is, what their values are, how do they move that within their organization, and should we be mirroring that with our own? So we start creating an ecosystem of suppliers where everybody is working around the same values, not the same purpose, we all have a different purpose, but we feel beyond the dollar that they are genuinely wanting to deliver a purpose for their organization and the values of those organizations from within out.
It sounds very much like how you would go through a recruitment process these days compared to my day when it was, yes, you've got a qualification, therefore you can do the job. But actually, do you share the values of the organization? Because if you don't, actually, we don't want you here, irrespective of how qualified you are.
Right.
If you don't share our values, then you become an inhibitor to the organization rather than an asset.
And what's interesting now is that I think that if you have the right purpose, an authentic purpose, not, you know, can we get a brand agency in to give us a purpose and we'll send everyone some mugs and some stress balls with the strap line. We all see through that now. It has to be genuine. It's why we love Toms, right? You know, Toms, the shoes. It's so authentic. That's why we just score it and we love it. And we may never have bought a pair of Toms, but they are authentic in what they do and they do not waver from their purpose. Lego is the same. Here's the thing about Lego. They are one of the biggest plastic producers on the planet, right? They make plastic bricks, billions of them. Yet we love them. Their reputation is up in the 80s. They have a great purpose. Their purpose is the future of engineering, right? They're teaching kids to be new engineers and think differently and think creatively. It's a collaborative product. Their purpose is play.
Yes. Learn through play.
Right. Yeah. But we believe it and we see it. Whereas if you can quite quickly see organizations that, you know, putting a bit of lipstick on the organization because they want to kind of get into the whole purpose, the purpose playground. I think, though, coming back to supportive behaviors, so measuring your reputation, getting the data, getting the insights, and actually going, how can we increase supportive behaviors, which is going to increase our reputational score, and in turn, that is going to increase our business results. We have to also be very, very careful that we are not falsifying it. Because people, your score will tumble as much as you build it. Just on your workforce thing, what's interesting for me, having worked in this space around workforce, of course, the thing now actually is I want to attract you. I want you to come to me. I want more people to ring me going, can I come and work for your business?
Yes.
To your point, it's not a tick box anymore. And actually, the new generation of workforce are actually sitting in rooms going, what? Tell me about what you're doing beyond your purpose. What are your values? They're not just coming to sign a check.
No. And that's very true of the work that's been done around the millennials, is that actually they don't take any job because, you know, there's a salary and benefits. But actually they're sitting there asking you as the employer, what are your values? Tell me about your social responsibility. No, I don't want to work for you because I don't believe what you're telling me. I'll go somewhere else.
Right.
Now that's putting the power in a totally different place
than
in the past, isn't it?
And it is. And also it goes back to the point we were chatting about earlier, is that reputation belongs across the whole organization. If I'm recruiting someone in engineering, and you're recruiting someone for finance, or you're recruiting someone as a third-party supplier, are we all telling the same story?
Well, we should be.
Right. How many of us aren't, it's quite complex.
Yes.
Which is why, again, even when you come to purpose, the sponsor of purpose has to be the CEO.
Yeah.
It can't be the marketing department. The CEO has to sponsor purpose.
But I also think with purpose, you're right, the CEO has to sponsor it and has to live it.
Yes.
But it has to cascade through the organization.
Right.
And One of the things that was a story somebody told me many, many years ago that had a real influence on me when I think about purpose, and that was a story about President Kennedy. He was walking around NASA, he was being shown round, and he saw a guy sweeping the floor, so almost as low as you could go. And he said to the guy, "What's your purpose?" And the guy said, "My purpose is to put a man on the moon."
Right. Exactly.
Now, if you've got that at the beginning, yes. Right down there, your organisation's already got the money in the bank, hasn't it?
And I think that, I mean, it's one of the most beautiful stories.
Yes.
And I think it does resonate, again, to the audience who are listening. You know, you don't have to be a FTSE 100 company to get this. You could be a company of 2 people, 10 people, 1 million. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Reputation belongs. It's the beating heart of an organization. And therefore, you know, the analogy, if the whole organization is your body, the reputation is the heart. It's pumping it around your organization 24 hours a day, 365 days of the year. And it's a journey.
Yes.
And I think that the board need to recognize that. It's not a switch on, switch off. It's not, oh my goodness, we've had a crisis. Let's get the playbook out, start on page 1, and hopefully by the time we get to page 10 of what we're being told to do, it'll all be over. You know, those days are so gone.
Yes.
And to be honest, you know, you look at companies who have even got that wrong. Sports Direct, you know, last year weren't even managing a crisis properly. So I think that the days of going to the corporate comms department because we've got a crisis, you know, if there are people out there who are still doing that, they're going to have a big problem in the next 10 years.
So what are you seeing then as the trends for 2018? What should we as internal auditors be looking out for?
I think they're on different levels. I think internal auditors could become trendsetters, actually.
Well, there's a thought.
I think the voice within an organization that is touching every part of that organization has the responsibility to be evangelizing, possibly educating, definitely, around what does reputation mean to you? What does it mean to you as a department? What does it mean to you as a division? Or what does it mean to you as an organization? You know, you are moving within an organization very fluidly. One of the things we have a big issue with when we talk to organizations is it's quite static at the beginning. I need to align the C-suite around reputation. Internal auditors are swimming the whole ocean.
Yes.
So they can touch everything. So I think they could be trendsetters. You out there could be trendsetters. And I think it's a subject now that you can have confidence in talking about. You don't need to understand the how or the what you need to do. But certainly the setting up of we're all contributing to one thing at the end of the day. Hmm. Yes, it's all about reducing risk, but ultimately that for me is critical, but it's reactive. Building reputation is a proactive. So out of that risk, out of the other audits that we do, we should be looking at ultimately how is that contributing to building something beyond. In terms of trends that we see beyond or outside, I think CEOs are becoming much more activists. I think the populations, and we see this around the world, populations are looking beyond government to change things now. There's a danger in that, going back to purpose. If you don't have a purpose, don't go and be an activist.
No.
You have to be an activist around your purpose. And I think people are looking more and more to CEOs to kind of come out more and be more vocal about who they are and what they do. You don't have to be in a big organization to do that. You know, your council leader, your hospital CEO, it doesn't matter, but stand up and be counted. Purpose we spoke about. The one thing I wanted to talk about very briefly as far as trend is concerned is influencers. The old days we would talk about influencers in terms of a very small group of people. Now, because of the world we live in, there are many, many, many more influencers. Influencers on an organization, good or bad, bloggers, tweeters, Facebookers, media. The world is, you know, instantly something can happen now and an influencer can change your world overnight, externally. Here's a thing, though, again, going back to audit, is influencers internally. And I think we all look out, we also need to look in. And how are we influencing internally? We go back to the water cooler.
Yes.
And I think, again, for the people listening today, think about being an influencer.
And I think that sits really well with culture, because when I think of culture, I always think of the iceberg, you know, 20% above the water, which is your formal culture, your policies, your procedures, yep, that sort of thing. And then the 80% below, which is exactly what you said, which is the water cooler conversations, the lift, whatever. And it's about internal audit, understanding its role in that sort of subculture as an influencer, but also identifying the champions of the business and of internal audit, which are not always the CEO or right, the C-suite. Sometimes the influencers come from a strange place that you may not necessarily have immediately thought of.
And that's such a great example. I was just thinking of mum, is it mum.com? The mum who set up a blog online, and she's become enormous.
Wow.
Mumsnet. Ah. Now, 10 years ago, you know, mums, it goes back to, we only really trusted them that in the playground they'd say my washing machine was
yes,
good. Now we have Mumsnet, who's a massive influencer in society now. So we have to keep looking forward. And I think that when it comes to reputation, we have to go, yes, you know, what we call market influencers now are absolutely critical to our reputation. Not all of them, to your point. And they may be, you know, Mumsnet started in by a mum, right? I think probably big corporates didn't even know they were there. Suddenly it's on them. Mm. Mumsnet, here we are. And I think it's the same internally. To your point, it could begin anywhere, mm, but it needs to be nurtured.
So, coming to the end of this session, and I'm hoping that you're going to come back and do some more, maybe a webinar when you launch your rep track for our audiences would be, yep, really great. But thinking now, how do you think, or what do you think internal audit needs to do in the reputation space to help the organisations?
I think, for me, there are three things. Evangelise at the top. Talk about reputation more. Talk about reputation as a valuable asset to an organisation, not something that, you know, comes and goes when we need it to. I think then there's that second layer of being able to be the glue in an interesting way, because you're talking to everybody at a senior level. Glue it up, you know, to your point right at the beginning of this conversation, you know, reputation, some people may not even have heard of it in an organization. They may believe in it, but it's not part of their job, it's not their role, so they have enough to do. So having somebody who can be weaving that together and getting people, just the story being told more, I think is really important at the top. And then we just spoke about that ocean underneath, which they touch, and talking to people when talking about risk and when doing an audit. Talk about those seven dimensions around reputation, because leadership in a department is as important as leadership in an organization.
Absolutely.
Workplace in a department, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it can just open up a conversation. I think it's refreshing. I think it shows that there's a different view that can be discussed and debated. There's no right or wrong right now, but it's bringing the topic into the organization and getting a rhythm around it.
Good. Thank you very much. So I think it's interesting to reflect that, you know, equally as we didn't know about Reputation Institute, and James didn't know about the Institute of Internal Auditors.
And that's fair.
And that together, I think there's a real opportunity for us to move forward. So I would beseech you, when you listen to this, to have a look at the Reputation Institute's website. Think about what you see there in relation to your organization, whether you're an internal audit function of 2 or 200 or 2,000. How can you do more, following the advice and guidance from James? And watch this space, because James is certainly going to come back and share some other thoughts with us. And as I mentioned, a webinar perhaps when he launches their RepTrack results later this year. But finally, just as we close, I can't not ask you about Carillion. And, you know, what do you think what's happened has done to their reputation?
I go beyond Carillion. I go to the industry.
Okay.
You know, I think that it was Corelli and it happened to, and I'm not going to debate the ins and outs of that.
I don't think we know them yet, do
right.
we?
Yeah. But what I do believe is what's happened with Corelli has opened up the debate about a whole industry. And it's an industry that needs to modernize. It's an industry that needs a purpose. It's an industry that needs to start to respect where society is and what society is expecting of organizations, certainly that big. And also to our point about the supply chain and really starting to debate how supply chains are, one, treated, but also how suppliers are delivering back to what a purpose should be. So I think Carillion, I mean, it's a tragic story, but I also believe that, you know, and it's said a lot, but I do believe out of this tragedy for so many people, the lessons need to be learned quickly. And in terms of reputation, I think it's a slam dunk in how not to build a reputation, not just for Carillion, but the industry as well. Because industry, everybody in your industry are contributing to your reputation.
Yes, that's brilliant. Thank you very much,
my pleasure,
James. And I hope those listening have really enjoyed this session. So thank you very much. And as I said, come back again, please.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you for downloading Talking Heads from the Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors.